Okay, hi everyone. My name is Katie Olmsted, and I'm here to talk about service communications with Office 365. Thank you very much for coming. I know it's the last day. We've got a nice small group here. The beauty of this is we can basically tailor the content today, make it your session. So let's figure out what you need to get out of this, and we'll make sure that we talk about those topics. So let's just dive right in. I am a technical product marketing manager on the Office 365 team. I focus on service health in particular and thinking about how do we keep the service healthy and how do we communicate that with you. I also think about service management. So once you're on Office 365, what can you expect from us and how does that work? So what I thought we would talk about today is basically what is service continuity? How do we think about service reliability, uptime, our service level agreement with Office 365? And then we'll talk a little bit about what happens if there is an outage. So I spend a lot of time thinking about incident management and how do we do a better job setting customer expectations there. So we'll talk about what's the service health dashboard, what are some of the tools that we communicate with, and then we do some things called a post-incident review or a post-incident report. So I want to dig into that and show you a little bit more around that in our post-mortem process. And then we'll also kind of round out the session with some of our predictable communications from a change management perspective. And then we'll also think about upgrades, system requirements, and how do we kind of make sure that your system is as healthy and fresh as it can be to make sure that you're always using the latest and greatest technology from Office 365. And then, of course, we'll end with the roadmap and talk a little bit about the future and some of the innovations that we've got ahead. So at a high level, I just wanted to talk about what is service continuity. And it's essentially our Office 365 approach to keeping the service reliable, keeping it up and running. And we think about this, I think it's important for you to be aware and to kind of share this perspective with your teams and your customers and other partners as well. You know, basically, we think about it in terms of how do we increase the availability of the service? We're always trying to keep that, to keep the availability higher. And you can think about kind of a way that we measure service continuity as being uptime. So how frequently does the service go down? And then we measure that across each of the workloads. So we look at Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, Link Online, and each service actually has their own measures around what does that mean to keep the service up and running. And then we think about basically recovering from disasters as an opportunity to learn. So we actually dissect and kind of go through every disaster and incident, and we really improve and kind of learn about the process there. So if you know, you're probably thinking, well, what's in it for me? What does uptime really mean? And we look at, you know, longer outages tend to have a greater impact on the overall percentage. The more people that are impacted also has a greater impact on that number. But this is a calculation I think is somewhat helpful just to think about how do we figure out uptime across the service. So it's basically user, you know, minus downtime over the user minutes times 100%. So you could run some real quick examples around that. But you know, the thing to keep in mind with uptime is we look at it across the service, but it's also based on tenant level. So you as a customer or a tenant might have a different uptime than other tenants on the service, just based on where you're located from an infrastructure perspective or a region location perspective. Office 365 has a financially backed service level agreement. So we actually, we believe and we're very committed to keeping the service up and reliable. So we think about it from a credit perspective, and we'll actually give you money back if the service falls below what we think is kind of the bar or the expectation of 99.9%. So we think about service credits, and we'll actually give you 25% of the invoice for the impacted workload. So if you think about Exchange Online for a monthly credit, we would give you 25% of your basically your invoice for that month. And you can see kind of the progression of the credits there. Now the services, as we've matured, you know, this is a great time for Microsoft and Office 365 as a service provider. We're really learning a lot, you know, about what does it mean to be a service provider. And as the service is evolving, we're seeing that the service is very stable. So over the last year, the service has, from a global perspective, so if you think, you know, like a North America-wide or an EMEA-wide, we've only had a few outages that have actually been global in nature like that, where all of the users in North America, for example, were not able to use Exchange. And so what that's done is we actually have had, for if you look at the past 12 months, the service has been over 99.9% for most of those months. We did have a dip with one of those global outages in November of last year. And that was, again, the global, so it was impacting most of the users in North America. And at that point, we did a proactive service credit. So we did a blog about the issue, and we actually sent email to all the customers that were impacted in North America and provided a 25% credit through that process. If you, as an individual customer, are impacted, you basically always have the opportunity to submit a service request and tell Microsoft, hey, I think I was impacted in this. We have third parties that monitor constantly the service based on this SLA, and then they can provide us the data, and we can figure out exactly what the credit should look like. But you do want to open that SR or service request in order to initiate kind of that reactive credit. So before we get into talking about outages and the communications and some of the service alterations, I thought it was important just to talk about, you know, Office 365 was designed to be very high availability and to be very resilient and have lots of good things to prevent outages. And so again, you know, that's our thinking is we're trying to be proactive, think about where might the service go down, where might we have issues, and then we design and kind of tweak and make the system better based on a variety of angles. I wanted to talk about functional redundancy, and you've probably throughout the conference heard a lot about these different topics. But if you think about functional redundancy in terms of keeping the service up and running for your users in particular, we design offline clients for Link, for Outlook, for all of those services so that you can basically be working, even if you're not able to connect to the service, you can work locally. Another great example is you're on the airplane. You can do your work still, and then when you connect back to the service, you're able to be productive and sync up again. Physical redundancy, you know, we also have all your data and your services are always co-located in two different data centers, just in case. So recently we had an issue with Brazil, where one of the ISPs there was kind of having some flaky network issues. We basically moved all the Brazil folks from the Brazil data center to San Antonio. No customer impact, nobody noticed, service continued as normal. So we always have that ability to kind of move people and make that happen. Resiliency is super important to us in terms of, if you think about Exchange in particular, we're always moving users across the Exchange servers so that this is one of the things that actually makes it hard to report, because from a tenant level, we're always moving, so we don't have an exact location. But the beauty of that is we're load balancing. So we're always kind of able to keep the service healthy and keep your service at the top performance based on kind of that movement. But again, that does provide challenges on the other end for reporting. I think human backup is another area that's pretty critical in how we kind of think about operating the service and managing the service. We know that humans can cause errors, but we also know that humans are super important in addition to the automation. So we have lots of monitoring, lots of inspections and predictability, you know, from monitoring systems. But then we add the human element of we have 24/7 engineers that actually develop and write the product that now become responsible to support the product. So that's been a change over the last year or so, where you actually have the dev and the engineers on call. So if something goes wrong, the ones that wrote the code are the ones that fix the code. And so that seems to have been working really well also. Another change we did here is pretty interesting, is over the last year we have communication managers. We've taken about 100 of those, reduced that to about a size of about 12 people. And so we just have better quality of communications during these incidents. So that's been another helpful thing. And then finally, just distributed workloads. If you think about the way Office 365 was designed, it's loosely coupled. So if we have a problem with Exchange or Link, it doesn't take down the whole system. it's kind of limited or quarantined to that certain area. So that helps a lot from a performance perspective. So this was just a fun picture of, you know, Jenny in the data center and things are about to happen. So let's see what could happen. When we think about four different types of service communications, you know, we have service incidents, which we're going to dig into and kind of talk a lot about here. We also think about planned maintenance, which is another thing that comes up on the service health dashboard. Service alterations. So anytime this is an area where we're investing a lot of resources and time. If you think about if anytime we're going to change the service, we want to let you know, right? There's no surprises. People don't like surprises. So we want to make sure that we communicate that and set your expectations, especially if it's impacting, you know, we think about change in a couple of vectors, but one is it users and admins that are impacted? Is it just users or is it just admins? And we realize it's going to take longer to communicate and roll out changes if users are impacted as well. And so some of the things that we've done here is we have a standard 30-day notification window where we will let you know about changes ahead of time. If it's a broader impact and it impacts your users, we'll give you about 90 days so that you can have some time to build the training or roll out training or talk to help desk employees and make sure everyone's aware of the upcoming changes. You know, I also think about account lifecycle, so subscription. How are we communicating to you about the health of your subscription? So is your credit card in a good state? Is your trial about to expire? And I hope everyone's had the ability to try, or you know, we have 30-day trials for Office 365, so that's another way that you could kind of try out some of the different SKUs and the different functionality. But again, there's about 88 different types of mails that you might have around a subscription lifecycle. So we really try and over-communicate in some of those places because we know there's, you know, if you change your seats or if you add different licenses for a certain type, we want to make sure that you're kind of aware of, at all times, of all those different changes. So you can think about account lifecycle mails as also like, you know, as a consumer or personally, you probably have mails from Land's End or catalogs, you know, L.L. Bean, REI, those types of things. When you get those in the mail, you probably pay more attention if it's really relevant to you. So that's something that we've been paying, you know, a lot of attention to is how do we make sure you have the tenant ID, the user ID, these types of fields that make it really relevant to you and you're able to, especially if you're a partner, you know, hey, my customer just received some, we always CC the partner of record on all these types of communications, so that's another way to kind of make sure that everybody that's part of the customer lifecycle is informed. So let's dig into my favorite topic. I actually have the unique pleasure. I'm one of the few people at Microsoft, you know, I mentioned this shift and this culture shift that's going on. I'm one of the few people that's on call from a marketing perspective. And so I do 24/7 shifts that we rotate through a few folks on the leadership team to basically ensure that customers are receiving kind of the best service possible. And if there are outages, that we communicate effectively and, you know, that we're giving as much detail as we can and the issue is being resolved as quickly as possible. And so we really pull together a team here. And we can talk a little bit more about the team, but we pull together a team during these incidents. So it's kind of interesting. I have a lot of firsthand looks at kind of this incident management process. But I think it's important, you know, for you to be aware that our primary channels really are the service health dashboard. We try and make that the first and best from a content perspective. And we're evolving here too, right? So this is a place where we're seeing a lot of improvements. I'd love to hear feedback if you things are working, not working. We do, you know, we've made a lot of changes and we do listen and we're continuously innovating in this space. So there's a lot of opportunity if you have ideas or suggestions for that to happen. So if you think about Service Health Dashboard, we also have an admin RSS feed that's available through the admin portal also. And what the RSS feed does is it basically pushes, so it's a more push or interruptive into your mailbox. So rather than having to pull from the Service Health Dashboard updates, this is a way that these things would land into your inbox. The RSS feed is a bit more generic, so it's based at a region level and an infrastructure level. So it might be, you know, EMEA Exchange is down. The beauty of the Service Health Dashboard is we're continuously making that more specific so that it's targeted just to you and your tenant. So what, and you can think of the evolution here. We're working to be able to get to the spot where we can tell you as a tenant, hey, 50% of your users are down, and be really specific there. We're not quite there yet. We'll talk, about how we're getting there and what's happening over the next few, months, and then, ultimately probably a year out. But there's a lot of work happening here, so it's pretty exciting. And then one of the differentiators around Office 365, if you think of compared to Google, basically we offer post-incident reports. 5 days after an incident, we publish a postmortem, talks about next steps, what are we going to do to resolve, what was the issue, what are we going to do to ensure that it doesn't happen again, and then any other kinds of information that might be useful, especially if you need to go back and report to other folks on your team about these types of things. This is a great way to kind of keep up to date on that. Additional channels, I thought if you're not aware of community, it's a great place. There's a lot of information oftentimes in the community around certain issues you might be having. And we really are trying to encourage this as another place to go from a communication perspective. So from a consistency perspective, the community is also another place to try. I was thinking about this a couple weeks ago. I was on a trip and my phone died. And I went to the Nokia forum and was able to find the answer to my problem pretty quickly. And so I didn't have to call support. And I was able just to solve it, kind of in the middle of the night on my own. And the same thing works in our community. It's a great self-service resource. We also have a new blog. So we have a technology blog. I'll share the link in a little bit. But we have a blog that we're going to be able to communicate to you around new features, functionalities, as well as service updates and critical service comms. So if there are things that apply to you as an admin of the service, we're going to start to use this blog as a way to aggregate and kind of compile all these changes. We did use the blog back in that November incident that I mentioned. Rajesh, our VP, we were trying to be very transparent, and we continue to do this, but Rajesh at that point came onto the blog and talked about how we, this didn't meet our expectations, it was unacceptable, and what we're trying to do to make that better. And we've seen those improvements since then. Now, Twitter is another, I wanted to mention Twitter because we actually, Twitter is more of a marketing handle for us right now around Office 365, but it is, at Office 365. It's great to follow and this handle and get a lot of information here. But it's, I think you'll see this evolve over the next year as well, where we're able to be more specific about service incidents. The issue for us right now around using Twitter is it's so broad. If we post onto Twitter, it's worldwide, it's not real targeted and relevant. And we're trying to be much more the right channel, the right audience, and allow people to be more specific. And this just seems like a megaphone to us. So we tend to use it more for marketing and less when things are kind of critical service comms. We're worried it kind of gets diluted or it doesn't land with all the right people. So as we think about service communications, we're looking at ways to be more targeted and offer you kind of those ways to pull information where you want to. So I wanted to dig in. I hope everyone's seen the Service Health Dashboard and had an opportunity to kind of be familiar with it. But it is kind of our first and best content. If you think about it from an infrastructure perspective, you can see here, this is in the portal. We basically list out each of the services and then kind of the key workloads as we think about it, like email or sign in. And then we'd be discreet about, is this part of the service working? Is it degraded? Is there some kind of performance impact? Or do we have additional information for you around maybe a service incident or a service interrupting event, perhaps? So there's a lot of different information. And we're getting more and more detailed about what we can show here. In fact, just recently we had a kind of a breakthrough where some folks were having, as they were upgrading, an auto-discover issue. We were able to push that out manually just to the people that were impacted. So we're starting to see kind of this ability to really target certain users through the Service Health Dashboard. And again, that will really improve over the next 6 months and be much more targeted. One thing I get asked a lot is, well, what happens if the Service Health Dashboard goes down? And that has happened. But as a customer, you hopefully will not notice that. We have what we call an emergency broadcast system that just automatically redirects. You can always go to httpstatus.office.com, and this would show you whether the Service Health Dashboard is running properly or provide you kind of the status as to what's happening. So, you know, the EBS or the Emergency Broadcast System is there. It's kind of our fail-safe way to make sure that everybody's we're able to communicate still. So I wanted to show you just with the 15 upgrade. This is the new Service Health Dashboard. It's got a cleaner look and feel. And if you look, this is I like this view because it kind of gives you a high-level view. We have some tools that we use internally that are similar, where it's green, yellow, red. At a high level, you can just pop in and see, is everything healthy? It also shows planned maintenance, and then you know all your resources, of course. But this is then the next kind of click in for the Service Health Dashboard. So you can see, I took this morning as a screenshot. I just wanted to show you, you know, the service is looking pretty healthy with all these checks. There's a couple areas that we might dig into, these the round circles with the eye. That means additional information. So we could dig into that and see. These are some of the different icons. So we really try and be specific. Was it a false positive that happened? You know, we thought it might be an issue, but it wasn't. An interesting thing, when at the first sign of either a monitoring alert or maybe an engineer or even a customer call, honestly, could trigger, we might say, we're investigating something. So we're going to post that just to let you know that we're thinking that you know we're looking into the service and we're thinking about what might be going on. And then we might put, you know, hey, it was a false positive, false alarm, nothing was wrong. Or you know some of these other options, maybe it was a service degradation. The service is healthy. So these are kind of the various things you might see there. In this case, we can look at the link online additional information and see what was going on. And it'll actually tell you the service was degraded and then service when the service came back to normal. With the investigating, I think it's important for you to be aware that we really try to hit a 15-minute mark of posting investigating. So we try and get that as soon as possible, and that's taken really seriously across the teams, and we're gold on it. So people are actually have metrics, and you know their reviews are based on, are we hitting this 15-minute mark of investigating? So we try and post that as quickly as possible, and then the cadence for updates, you know, depends on scope and impact, but the very typical cadence is every hour. So we'll post on the hour. If we have information sooner, we'll absolutely post that. But we also don't want to just be posting the same thing over and over, you know, every 10 minutes. So we think an hour is kind of a good cycle of, hey, this is what the latest information is, and we'll stick to that cycle. In some cases, we've had SharePoint issues where maybe there's a database problem. We know it's going to take us 16 hours to fix. Then we would post here and say, hey, we're going to provide an update in about 3 hours. Or 4 hours. So we'll tell you what the cadence is if we go off of the scheduled hour. We've had some, again, you know, we're constantly improving and innovating here in the space. And one thing customers asked for was, we used to have 7-day history. And back in February, we increased it to 30 days. And so this was a you know, basically directly from feedback. So we're looking at kind of how to always improve the service and make it more useful. And people said, I do reports. You know, I report out to my leadership teams on a monthly cycle. So we thought, well, let's provide that 30-day view. You can always click in on the incidents and see, even in the history, you can dig deep and see, you know, maybe I want to see what the SharePoint example was, or these were some of the Exchange ones that happened, and click in and see more information. So I mentioned a little bit about the process. So within a service incident, this is the flow. I wanted you to kind of be aware of what's going on behind the Service Health Dashboard. You know, people are really actively working on the incidents. If the incident occurs, we talked about investigating as kind of that first status. The incident gets posted to the Service Health Dashboard, and essentially it's updated, you know, as we mentioned, until restoration. One thing that's improved greatly is this closure summary. So we've heard, you know, loud and clear, 5 days seems like a lot to wait for a post-incident report. But we really are trying to do the due diligence, you know, of finding the facts and making sure we do a thorough job of the next steps and those types of things. So we still want to keep that 5-day window to come back to you with the post-incident report. So what we've done in kind of the interim is really beefed up and made the closure summary have a lot of details, as accurate as we can be. So I'd encourage you to really look at the closure summary and think, maybe this is good enough, you know, for what I need to report back or share with the team. But again, the closure summaries are getting better and better, and we're really trying to make that as detailed as possible. So here's a little bit about the team. You know, this the incident teams, on any given incident, there's usually anywhere from 6 to 14 people, regardless of the time of day, regardless of you know, where it's impacting, that get triaged and pulled in to work these incidents. So we think about it as an incident manager. You know, there's somebody, again, like from an engineering perspective, that's really running the fix, the troubleshooting, and the resolution. There's a communication manager that's also, again, remember those dedicated 12 people. So these are the people that focus on the quality of the communication, but they do have really technical expertise and are part of those engineering teams as well. And then we have support. Of course, you can always use the chat support, the phone support. You know, again, that's a differentiator for Office 365, is you always have access to that support channel. And then in some of the more managed spaces for some of the larger accounts in the enterprise SKUs, we have Premier, TAMS, which are technical account managers, or Cloud Vantage, cloud delivery executives. Depending on the, you know, the level of service that you need or support you need, there could be these additional resources that staff and that are also brought in to kind of look at your account and the issues. So we talked a little bit about the RSS feed. I just wanted to show you what that looked like. You'd basically get a mail like this, you know, that kind of comes in. And again, it's a little bit higher level, so I tend to look at the Service Health dashboard first. But folks have told me, hey, it's kind of nice to get an email, and then I can go look at the Service Health dashboard and verify, you know, whether or not we're impacted. So you might get, you know, again, you might get a mail here, but you're not impacted. You know, this is going to be a broader swath or kind of look at the service. But again, it's just one way to kind of dig in. Here's the community site if you're not familiar with it. And Twitter, again, here's some screen clips of that. So customer email is one of our kind of primary methods of communicating. And so I wanted to just talk a little bit. This was taken from one of those proactive credits that I mentioned. This is what it would look like, and this is what you might receive from a communication perspective. But I think what's probably more important is some feedback I've been hearing lately is, I'm not getting mails. I don't know how to make sure I'm, you know, maybe an admin left the company and now they're still getting the mails. So I thought, let's just take a few minutes and talk about, how do I find where to set the mails, and what is this, how do I do this? So if you look at, up in the upper right corner of the admin portal, there's a place called Settings, Office 365 Settings, and that's kind of where we're at here in the Service Health dashboard, the admin portal, rather. And then this field here, Alternate Email, there's two places for email, Alternate Email and then Business Email. A lot of people, what we do with this Alternate Email, this is where we send password resets. This is where we also send some of the critical service notifications. And it's a little bit confusing because there's another field. Let me show you this business field. This is the business email, and this is under the contact preferences. And so sometimes the critical service communications go here. Often, to this alternate email are the subscription notices, your credit card's expiring, your subscription's about to expire. And the thinking behind this, it's confusing, and we're going to sort this out as we move forward. But the thinking is, if your tenant is expiring, you may need to get the email from a different, from your Hotmail account or your Outlook.com. So it's really that alternative email is trying to think of, if you might miss it in your tenant email or your business email, the alternate email is another place to check. So again, I mention this just because it's really critical and it's important to set your alternate email and make sure that you're kind of looking at those accounts. You know, I've had people say, oh, I put in a Yahoo account and I never look at that again. Well, we just want to make sure to remind you that that's an important place. Okay. So let's talk a little bit more about post-incident reports. You know, we mentioned they're available within 5 business days. This is kind of the information that's available. But what I wanted to share is that there's some pretty new things that we've done here. You can click on the incident within the Service Health dashboard and actually get the PIR now, get the post-incident report. That used to be kind of a kludgy way you had to go through into community and dig that out, and it was kind of, you know, obscure. And we said, oh, we're actually not trying to hide this. We're trying to surface this in a place that's logical. And so we just thought, well, let's just put it right here in the Service Health dashboard. It's now available as a document. You can just basically view it. And then you can save these locally if you need to have some kind of record of that. You know, and then the other thing you can do is if you ever need a PIR or you want some of this, you know, information later, support. You can open a support request and they can help you. We have all of this from a historical perspective. We want your feedback on this. We're really trying to improve. So you'll notice when you look at some post-incident reports and even those closure summaries that I mentioned, we're attaching surveys there now so that you can provide direct real-time feedback and tell us, hey, I would have liked more information here, or this is what I'm doing with this information. It's not useful enough, or this one was really great. You know, we'd also like to see when things are looking good, or that helps us kind of know this is going in the right direction. And that's pretty, you know, hot off the presses. That's just available since the end of May. So again, I really wanted to kind of impart how important continuous learning and innovation is for us in this space. We really we do the post-incident reports, and then we do a 30-day review where we really dig into every incident, and you can see we look at the timelines of the incidents, and we're kind of looking at how could we have done better from a communications perspective as well as a troubleshooting perspective, and then how do we kind of roll that into the future incidents. And we think that's, you know, part of being a best practice of being a good service provider is how do you really you know, make it an opportunity, and if you have something go wrong, how do you learn from it? We get a lot of questions around planned maintenance. You know, why does Office 365 do maintenance during the day? Why does Office 365 do maintenance during my high peak time? And really the truth behind it is we're always doing updates. It's a service that we're continuously updating. And so we've tried different methods in the space where we've looked at trying to do it on off-peak hours and we can get down to the real precise, you know, in Asia, over the weekend, a certain overnight. And then lately we've gotten to the point where we think that all the updates we're doing will not be customer impacting because they've gone through such a rigorous testing cycle. And so more and more, we're just trying to get to the place where we have continuous service hygiene, but that's not customer impacting. But what we try and do is let you know. We're going to be doing maintenance during these time frames. We post it 5 days ahead of time. And then we'll tell you a little bit. Here's an example. You know, so we'll tell you it's scheduled. This is what we're trying to do. And then when they're completed, we also let you know that as well. And, you know, again, transparency, being very authentic. We've had issues in this space. You know, we're changing ACLs, or things are happening in the network, and we're replacing hardware. And we didn't think it was going to be customer impacting, and it was. So this is a place that we're improving, and we're trying to do a better job. Okay, let's talk about service alterations. Think about this as we really focus on admins here and trying to empower, you know, the admin to be in control of the service. You know, we know there's a shift now, and there's kind of this balance of running the service. And so if things are going to be changing, if things are going to be going away, if things are going to be added, we want to make sure that you're in the loop and you're kind of up to speed with those changes. So think about things like live meeting is expiring. You know, live meeting might be expiring because Link is coming on. So in those cases, we'll look at who's still using live meeting. We'll do a very targeted email send. And then we'll start to also, moving forward, be able to post in the Service Health dashboard, notify you in product that these things are happening. So we're trying to kind of come at it from all different angles so that you don't miss those alerts, because we know how important that is. Some other examples of this, recently we had the UI change for Office 365, and it's got a beautiful new, you know, redesigned login page. we were thinking about that as a team, and we said, you know, we should communicate, send everybody, all admins, an email on that, because it could be perceived as a security breach. You know, if you come in one day and you see a different login screen, you might think, what happened? Is this really still my tenant? So we went ahead and communicated that. So we, you know, we're learning and we're trying to be a little bit more sensitive to things, because we've had a lot of feedback where people said, you thought that wouldn't impact me, but you know, this is why it does, and you know, the user impact. So this is one of the ways that we try and aggregate these changes. We call it an admin task newsletter, and it's pretty dynamic in the sense that we take all of the tenants that are impacted by a certain change, and then we tailor this newsletter so that you only receive the things that are relevant to you. So for example, we might want to be telling you that, hey, we noticed that you're on Windows XP, or you have some users that are still on XP. Coming in April 2014, you know, XP is going to not be supported from an Office 365 perspective, from the best experience. So we want to start, you know, letting you know that now, so you have several months to kind of work through that. We typically try and identify those changes a year out if they're disruptive like that. But you can imagine as the service is starting to move quicker and quicker and updates are happening more often, that 12 months seems like a really long time. So we're going to start to bring that in. You know, we'll let you know as soon as we can, but it'll probably be more like 6 months, 8 months, 9 months, you know, anywhere in that time frame. But again, these are aggregated, so it's not a laundry list. This is very targeted to you and your tenants. And again, you would receive that to that global admin, you know, in that business email and that alternate email. This is where these types of emails would come, or these newsletters. We also do a lot in those community spaces I mentioned around an admin task center. So there's one for enterprise and there's one for small business. And we try and put all the changes online there as well. And then in those newsletters and emails, kind of point you back to this as a place where you can get FAQs, you can get, you know, VKBs or knowledge base articles. So there's always a lot of, you know, kind of things going on here. And again, think about this as, these are usually disruptive. So these are things, you know, we're not trying to let you know, hey, there's a new feature, or hey, these are things that we think are really critical service comms to keeping your business running well. I wanted to just quickly talk about service upgrades. We're kind of in the middle of this transition now from 14 to 15, and this was one of our big major upgrades, and so I thought it would be important just to talk about how is this world changing, and really we're kind of getting more and more efficient. So you can think about things as kind of a minor upgrade or a major upgrade, and as I mentioned, you know, the cadence of this release cycle is just we're going to start to see more monthly updates, and really even daily updates, where if there's maybe there's a hot fix or a service pack that needs to be, you know, those things will just happen. And then we're going to have some features that will be aggregated and held into what's kind of more of a major upgrade. And those will probably be more like moments in time, like there's an education release. So there's a whole bunch of things that are of value for educators, and that would be coming out at a certain time. Or maybe there's a whole bunch of things that are relevant, you know, for a different kind of scenario or audience, and those would kind of be bundled up and brought to the service at one point in time. So from the 14 to 15 perspective, though, if you're part of this upgrade, you know, this is kind of the process of communication. So we're going to send you an email about a month out and say, we're getting ready to do your upgrade, and then about, you know, 14 days prior, we're going to say this is the exact day it's going to happen, give you some awareness around that, and then basically send an email after the upgrade's completed, let you know it's completed, just in case there's you know, any reason to get in touch with us around that, and then we'll send you a survey after that, just to, how did it go, what was the experience, you know, and hopefully that was a good experience. This is what one of these emails might look like. So you can see we kind of target it. We put the organization, your tenant ID. We try and provide as much information. That's been another area that people have been providing feedback on is give me my user ID, give me my tenant ID, tell me the SKU or the offer that this is relevant to. So we're going to continue like to build this out and provide more information here. And this is a service upgrade center. So again, kind of like the admin task center, we provide a whole community page or a wiki page that we're continuously providing kind of the latest information around service upgrades. We just recently updated the the system requirements policy for Office 365, and you know, you might be thinking, well, why is that important? You know, I'm on the service, and so I should always just have the latest and greatest. But if you don't have the kind of the recommended client, you're not going to be able to take advantage of some of the new features and the enhancements. So I just wanted to share kind of how to think about it from a web browser, from the client, you know, and then you know the operating system as well. I think the big thing to kind of keep in mind is coming April 2014, think about IE. So you know, right now IE8 is kind of the minimum browser level, and Windows XP as well. In April, we're really going to be trying to get people moving off of those platforms and onto IE9, kind of onto IE10. And so if you can start to do those changes now, that would also be beneficial. Okay, so this is an exciting thing that I've got some things that are new and hot off the presses here. We just released this technology blog. This is basically just for admins, just for our tech, you know, ed kind of audience here. These are all, these are going to be things that are very relevant to you. So there's a marketing blog. This is more of the technology angle. And this is where you're also going to start to see us post updates. So I'd highly encourage you to think about this as a, you know, a primary channel in addition to the Service Health dashboard. And this will be a place that we be more programmatic and consistent. So, you know, people often say, I just want one place to check. Microsoft is so big, or Office 365 can be kind of overwhelming from an information perspective. So this will be the blog, you know, that would then point you out to other places. Okay, and so we do have some news. This is the first time I've been able to share this. This has pretty much just gotten the blessing and the approval to go forward. You know, what we've been finding is, again, some of this confusion with email. We think that we should really kind of be winding email down. We have about a 50% open rate, which is actually pretty good for emails. But you know, we still feel like, gosh, we're missing 50% of the people that need to be hearing this information. So what we're looking at doing is kind of as we building more and more in product, so things start to pop in the ribbon, in the admin portal. And then we're also thinking about how do you have kind of an aggregated comms panel or some kind of place where, you know, conceptually, all of these things are there for you, and you can almost interact with it, right? Where you can say, yes, I've done that. It's your checklist, and it's a way that we know these things are also being acted on. So, and then, you know, we'll have that telemetry and those optics into your users, so we can also help you say, you know, we see that, you know, there's still some folks using XP, and you would see that kind of in this view as well. So again, trying to be much more predictable, programmatic, that's definitely a focus for us in this space. And I'll show you what this kind of looks like. So we talked about quarterly newsletters. We're going to be moving that to a monthly update, which is pretty exciting. So rather than having to wait, you know, and only get this four times a year, you would actually start to see something monthly. And again, not trying to inundate you, but trying to be more consistent. So on a monthly, you know, recurrence, you're seeing this is the progress, these are the things that are happening. And we'll also start to get better about Yammer, adding some additional channels here so that we can figure out, basically I think about it as I want to provide you a menu of communication channels and you can self-select. You know, I like Yammer, I don't want Yammer. And we'll provide you the same information in a variety of channels. Okay, so future direction. Pretty exciting. Tenant level reporting is probably the biggest request we get. I don't care about everybody else on Office 365. I just want to know about me and my service. So we're really working on this. We're seeing great improvements here. One thing we just saw from a field perspective, our internal folks now have the ability, we call it the domain customer lookup, and we can look. So if you think you're impacted, we have the ability now to see if your tenant is impacted, which is huge. That was something we didn't have 2 months ago, So again, that just came out at the end of May. And it provides us the ability, if you call in, we now know whether or not you're impacted, which seems simple, but it's actually, it was challenging for us based on some of that load balancing I mentioned. And so we're really, really improving. And then what you'll see here is this is the first step. So then moving forward, we'll be able to communicate tenant level, again, to your service health dashboard. You know, right now it's still a little bit abstracted from that perspective, but tenant level reporting is our target. We talked a little bit about in-product notifications, but again, that's, we really want to get outside, you know, get away from email and some of these other vehicles unless you want to receive them and just make everything baked into the product. So we think that's going to be a better way, a better experience for you. We're excited. We have some Service Health Dashboard preview programs coming. So right now we're running a Service Health Dashboard mobile app. So again, you know, based on feedback of, hey, I don't want to sit glued to my desk and watch the Service Health Dashboard. I actually have it on my phone. If you'd like to see it, you can come up after and take a look. It's a tile with the Service Health Dashboard. It provides toasts and notifications. You know, one thing that people consistently said was, interrupt me, buzz me, alarm, you know, put some kind of alarm on this so that if something goes wrong and I'm out having dinner, I can be notified. So this is what this app is intended to do. It's in beta right now, so pretty exciting. It'll be available soon. But again, that's for Windows Phone. And then you can imagine the roadmap there being an HTML app, some kind of ways that we're going to take that mobile Service Health Dashboard experience and extend it. You know, and then even provide an API at some point where you can just consume that information and do with it what you want with your own line of business applications. So that's a really exciting path. It's going to happen very quickly. You know, over the next year, there'll be a lot of enhancements and innovations there. But you can see that's, you know, where we're, the direction we're heading there. And again, you'll start to see some of these preview programs, beta programs around that lighting up. They're happening now, and then they'll be lighting up, you know, through September and October. So that's the future. So with that, we'll kind of close out with, here's some additional resources. Resources here. And of course, the evaluation. Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Well, we're actually done. So are there any questions or comments? I'm also available if you want to just come up one-on-one if you have specific questions. But I hope this is what you were, you know, expecting to get out of the session. Thank you. Yeah, I think we're good. Okay.